it is a wonderful idea that we can understand in Pesach that is deeper than last week. Last time we met, I think we discussed the idea of leaping to a level that Pesach can take you to, and then the fact that there's always a price you pay afterwards, that you sink and you have to do the hard work, right? Remember? In the second place, which is that all of life really goes that way. We learn it from Pesach. That is that all experience begins, classic examples, marriage, like we said, begins with an unreal sort of experience and then crashes after that, which is the norm. So that you can then work back to where you were before in a way where you actually acquire the level. Now, there's a stage deeper than that, which is a fascinating idea. See if we can understand. First, let's try and understand the idea, spiritual idea. Then let's see if we can actually apply it to, you'll see it has an application in the practical world where you can actually work on your personality. Someone asked here, if you could go through maybe the stages of what we're supposed to be working on in these 7 weeks. You'll see that, in fact, what we're really discussing is the first stage, already before the first stage even begins, which is the idea of making a beginning in working on yourself. And the older you are, the harder it is, because the more you have tended to sink into what it is that you think you are or have become, and the less likely you are to find the energy to be that incredible individual that you're really supposed to be. But really, unless you prepare to do that, root out everything that you have become and really become something new, so then you'll never amount to anything. Actually, the truth is you have to do that all the time. It's not just that you have to once sort of shake out the chometz, you know, in your mind, clean it out and sort of start something new. Really, you have to do that all the time. But first, the first time is the hardest, is to learn how to actually make a sort of rocket-powered beginning in working on yourself so that you actually can become superhuman and not just grind further into the rut that you have worn out for yourself already. You realize, of course, the happiness of being able to do this. The alternative is grinding a rut deeper and deeper, so life becomes sadder and sadder because you get more and more fixed into the same old habits and less able to generate the newness of what you're supposed to be. And of course, it rubs off on everyone around you. The idea of Torah living is that you're always generating, exploding something new, exploding into being something new, so that you can, that's how you generate what you are. Actually, it's only that point of newness that really determines who you are. Following the habit of what you achieved already is just mechanical. A machine can do that, a monkey can do that. The only thing a machine or a monkey can't do is generate that spark of newness. Are we together? Really. The whole point of being Jewish, actually really, if you really want to know, it's being human, is to be able to generate something completely new than you were yesterday, actually than you were a minute ago. Should be every minute, but halavai, we should just do it. Even once a year for us would be a major, even once would be a major achievement for us. But the point is, at least you're supposed to every day. So after a conscious thought before you go to sleep every day, what was I yesterday at this time? Am I different now than what I was last night at this time? And if not, why not? And make a plan how tomorrow night at this time, before you fall asleep, you'll be different than you were now. And if not, you fail. Amazing thing. Amazing idea. Amazing thing. You know, we learn it from the person. Where do we learn it from? Obviously, the person who made that first beginning for the first time. Who was? Yes, Avraham Avinu. Too much wine and matter. Avraham Avinu was the person who radically radicalized himself. That means he came from a background completely opposite to what Torah was, and he snapped into a new being. But the Chiddush, the Chazal tell us, he didn't only become something new, he became a man who was constantly becoming something new. You know, when there's a part in the Torah where he says, "Anochi afal v'efer, I am dust and ashes." So he wasn't being poetic. Mephoshim explained, there's nothing poetic in Torah. It might be poetic also, but it's much more than that. It means this. To be dust and ashes, incredible. To be dust and ashes means that what I was yesterday has been ashed. And that ash I've turned into the earth. Afar means the earth from which new growth occurs. To be a medium from which new growth will occur. You hear that? That means he saw himself as constantly at the interface between burning everything that he had become and turning it into a rich soil to become something new. And as soon as it sprouted something new, he would burn that instantly and let that become a soil for something new. That's what he was constantly. You hear that? That means there was never a moment in his life that he did something because he'd been doing it yesterday. Because if you do something today because you did it yesterday, you're rolling on. That's called dying. You have to do something today because you do it now, not because you happened to start it yesterday. Are you with me? You know, ash actually, even the doctors will be able to tell you, when you want to know what the elements are of an organ or something in medicine, you ash it. You subject it to tremendously high temperature instantaneously, and you're left with an ash of basic elemental constituents. That's what it is. That means ash, amazing thing, ofer, ash, is that which is, ash is that which is the basic elements of a thing without any combination, with no compounding. It's all been broken. That means, sure, you leave something over. Of course, it would be pointless to destroy everything that you've become. What would be the point? And start new. You don't do that. But you break down all the habit-forming elements that have bound things together. And you're left with just the raw material. The concept mystically is that what you're supposed to be left with from yesterday is where you arrived at yesterday is now trying. You don't just disregard it. You don't discard it. What happens is you use what you arrived at yesterday as just the new, just the elements of what are going to be put together today in a new way. And that the ash is transformed into earth. Amazing, amazing idea. Imagine if you could do that every day. Imagine if you could take your life every day and take what you became yesterday. And make that just ashes compared to what it's going to become today. It's something we don't get excited about. Let me try and share with you. You know, in Torah and Yiddishkeit, this idea runs through everything. It's not a nice sort of idea. It's absolutely basic. Absolutely basic. It's got much deeper mystical content we have to discuss another time, maybe. But I'll give you one application. Listen to this. You know, in English, when you don't feel it in English, because English doesn't have the spiritual, the beautiful language, but it doesn't have the spiritual depth. In Torah and Hebrew, when you want to say, how do you express this? Let me give you an example. When you talk about past, present, and future, in English, past, present, and future, that's all it means. In Torah, it's like this. Let's say you haven't seen somebody, and now they arrive and you see them. And you ask them where they come from, and then where they're going to. Yes? And that's the process. Where have you been? Who are you now? And where are you going? So you have like this. In Hebrew, the past, when you say, where have you come from, you say, me'ayin bata. Me'ayin, from where? And who the person is now is called ani. That's the selfness. Ani, me. And to where are you going is la'an, or ana teleth, where are you going? The Kabbalistic commentaries point out that those three words are actually the same root. You know that? Me'ayin, the word ayin, ani, just a rearrangement of the same letters, and la'an, ana, the same root, the same letters. It means where you came from, who you are now, it's all the same thing, just rearrange the letters. But actually, much more than that, listen to this. Where the person came from, you say, me'ayin bata, where did you come from? But the word me'ayin literally means from nothingness. Ayin, the word aim in Hebrew. Yesh me'ayin, from nothingness. And ani means what I am, and la'an, or anna, is a word that means to where are you going. But anna actually is a word, it has a meaning in Hebrew, it doesn't only mean where are you going. It's a word that's so powerful you can't even translate it. Anna in Hebrew means, it's like an inexpressible longing. It's a plea, it's like saying please, but I mean that's a faint echo of what it is. It's an inexpressible, untranslatable expression of longing for something that you can't even be aware of what it is yet. Like you say, Anna Hashem, Hashi Anna. Right? When you say to Hashem, save, that means when the Jewish people pour out their heart to Hashem, that this whole Golah should end and all the tragedy here, that we should see the light at the end of the tunnel. When we pour out our hearts at that moment in Hallel, we say, Anna Hashem Hashi Anna. Anna Hashem means, it means please, but it means please in a way that you can't even begin to translate. So listen to this, listen to this. Somebody walks in, this is how Hebrew works, unbelievable things. Somebody walks in, you know, all we're talking about is somebody walked in from the garden and he's on his way to the kitchen. Right? That's what it is. And you speak to him like this, you say, me'ayin bata and ana teleth, which literally means you come from nothingness and you are going to an inexpressible dimension of greatness that can't even be apprehended. Isn't that incredible? He walked in from the bathroom, you know, and he's on his way to the, you know, that's all. And you follow? When your child walks into the room and a parent says, where did you come from and where are you going? If you stop for a moment and hear those words, what you are saying is, you come from nothingness and you go to a dimension that I can't even translate because, do you know what that means? It means that the Jewish consciousness grasps any moment of existence as a translation from a nothingness. That means, listen carefully, it means what we grasp your existence as now is that whatever you are now as a human being with all your sensitivity and nobility and greatness, what you are now is as if compared to a total nothingness a second ago. And that's nothing compared to what you'll be a second from now, if you're living correctly. You hear that? That means... I still don't jump up and down. That means... What? Understand. It means this, that the Jewish concept of life, it doesn't matter how short, okay? Yes? Nothing's worth it. The Jewish concept of just being here is that every second is of infinite power. It means, you follow, it's a transition from a nothingness to what it is now. There is an infinite transition. But that's only the ashes of what it's going to be from here to the next stage. And we grasp it at any moment. That's what Avraham Avinu put into the world. That's what he put in. The nations of the world, you'll see, their idea is that the beginning of a thing is powerful and from zero is an exponential downhill run. Isn't that what it is? You see, the nations of the world, they're happy at a birth of a person, and as life goes on, it gets sadder and sadder. That's what it is. And old age, in Holland today, the leading cause of death in the elderly is active euthanasia. That's what they have. They bump them off. Not just let them die, they kill them. And people request that. Why? Because what else have you got to live? You know, all you can do, you can turn your chair a bit closer to the sun now. You've got no energy left. But that's not the Jewish concept. The Jewish concept of life is, on the contrary, the more you have, the more this explosion of being develops. Actually, it's much deeper than that, because the word ani, you see, may ayin bata, from where did you come, which means from a nothingness, translates itself into the word ani, which is what I am now. And actually, in Kabbalistic writings, ani is the name of Hashem. You hear that? The word that means I actually is one of the secret names of Hashem. That's a very dangerous idea. You have to be very careful who you tell that to, but you hear that? But that's what it is. That means that unbelievable. Yeah. Now, let's see if we can trace the roots of this idea and see where it takes us. There's a great happiness in this idea, because people think that unless things are the way they plan it from beginning to end, as long as they think, and actually they won't accept any endpoint, they actually think it has to be, and of course it isn't that way. It actually isn't that way. When you think about it, the memory of whatever's been, no matter how short it is or how long it is, the memory is just a memory. And in fact, it gets shorter the older you get. Anyway, now, let's see if we can trace it in place. Let's start like this. You see, to have an idea is a Kabbalistic question. There's a question in Arizal. You don't mind a little bit heavy, no? Mm-hmm. So think, okay? You with me? Huh? See if we can try and stay with this. Beautiful, wonderful, wonderful idea. And if you're not too interested in the heavy stuff, you'll see, you can bring it into practical application in your life. There's a question like this. You see, it says that in Egypt, we were on the 49th level of impurity. The 49th level of Tumah. That means one more stage, we would have been out of it completely, lost forever, irredeemable. The 50th doesn't mean 50, the 50th is always outside the system. That's why we don't even count it. You know, we're going through Sfiras Omer now, tonight's the fourth night of Omer. We count 49. The Torah says, Sfatim Lachem, count for you, and it says, Chamish, Tispiru Chamishim Yom, count 50 days. We don't count 50, you know that? We only count 49. The 50th is Shavuos. We don't stand on Shavuos night and count tonight is the 50th night. We don't count it. Why? Because the Chazal understand that the 50th is not a number, it's a concept of outside all numbers. You can't count it. If you could count it, you'd be reducing it to a number. The concept of the 50th is a transcendent level that's outside all, it's outside. When you get to the 50th gate, the 50th level, Moshe Rabbeinu and Moses asked to be able to see the highest level that a human could see. He was shown 49 levels. The 50th he couldn't be shown. Why? Because the 50th level is not a level, it's outside. If he would have been shown the 50th level, he wouldn't have been anymore. He would have seen the level which is beyond where all individual human existence is, and he wouldn't have been there to see it. He would have been part of... You can't get... That's outside... That's out of the world. It's a bit... Yes? The Nun. Nun is the 50th. Actually, if you think about it, even to show that it's infinite or endless, you know that all Hebrew roots that begin and end with the same letter always mean an infinite cycle. You know that? Like Shoresh, for example, root. The word for root in Hebrew begins with a root letter and ends with a root letter, because it's always striking root. Or the word, if you want a fantastic example, music. Music is always a Kabbalistic expression of, you know what, you can get through music. You could get to, if you know how to use music correctly, you can get to prophecy. Definitely, it says that the prophet was called in by one of the kings, and he couldn't prophesy. So he had them bring musicians, and then he was able to snap into prophecy. See? Actually, it's higher than that, because it says, that when the musician played, he reached his level of prophecy. But actually the Kevin itself means Bahaya Kanagain Hamanagain, when the musician became the music. You follow? Anybody with me? The word Nagain in Hebrew, which means music, starts and ends on the 50th letter. Because music is the highest experience. Actually, Nagain spells Nun Gan, the 50th level of the garden. After Pesach, we bring whiskey. Anyway. So Nun, the very word Nun itself, is a letter that starts with the 50th, has the Vav in the middle, which is the connecting letter, and ends with the 50th. I mean, it's outside the system completely. The 50th level of wisdom is outside the system. The 50th level of Tumah Chasoshon, that means the 50th level of impurity, you're finished. You can't be salvaged. When you get to that level, you become completely part of the material, and there's no human spark left, and you can't be saved. And since we had reached the 49th level of impurity, whatever that means, we couldn't be left in Egypt any longer. And the Arizal says, the great Kabbalistic author, thinker, in many places it says that we'd reached the 50th level of impurity and therefore we had to be saved instantly. Because had we stayed one more minute in Mitzrayim, we would have been lost completely. Because we're on our way down, 49th, one more, it's all over. Therefore Hashem saved us after 210 years, even though we were supposed to be there for 400 years. It said that we'd be there for 400 years, but since we got to that point where there was a point of no return, so Hashem, what was it? I was swaying. I was trying to keep awake. After 210 years, the point had been reached of no return, so Hashem had to save us, right? Because he couldn't let us stay any longer. So he did us the kindness of calculating the 400 from a different point in time, and not from the point where the slavery began, or the Egyptian bondage. He calculated from the birth of Yitzchak. Anyway, whatever that may be, the point is that, so what do you see? What do you see? You see like this, that we were at the point of no return. Although it says we had merits, we didn't change our names, we kept Jewish names, we kept the Hebrew, the language, and we kept our Jewish clothing, our modest way of dress. There were tremendous merits. There was no immorality among the Jews. There were fantastic merits. But be that as it may, it also says we're on the 49th level of impurity. Maybe it means relative to our greatness. The point is we were about to be lost, okay? For what we were, one more instant we would have been lost. So the question, are we together? So the question they ask is like this, and you can imagine they were slave people, they didn't have a Torah, they didn't have a national history. Sure, they had Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and the 12. They had a fantastic, but they weren't yet what we are now. And they were slaves, tortured, born in slavery, 210 years in slavery. The children, the people of that generation. There was no one alive from the early generation, except maybe one woman, Sarah Bas Asher, it says. But in general, they were people born in slavery. Why did they know? They grew up with torture. So they were about to be lost. About to be lost. Now the question is this. When the Chazal, listen to this, a fantastic question, unbelievable. When the Chazal say that one more minute in Mitzrayim would have caused us to be finished, they mean it literally. It means when the final moment in Egypt came, had we been prolonged, had we been left there for one more instant, we would have been finished. That's what they mean. It's not vague, it means exactly. Now the question they ask is this. Some of the Kabbalistic commentaries they ask this question. What do you mean one more minute we would have been lost? One more minute in Egypt, what was one more minute? It was one more minute of the night of the killing of the firstborn, of Hashem revealing himself at the end of the 10th plague, when the Jewish people were at the highest point they ever could have been. One more minute of that would have finished us? What do you mean? You understand? Let's go through the question again. You see, that it sounds nice. 49th level, one more minute would have, but if you analyze it, you draw a timeline and actually look at it in the technical details, it's impossible. Again, if the words were one more year of slavery would have finished us, I understand. Or one more day of slavery, torture, yes, we would have succumbed us. But it doesn't say that. It says one more instant in Egypt, longer than we would have been finished. So there are commentaries to understand the question to mean, look at it literally. Here we were slaves, then the plagues began, it took some months, each of the 10 plagues. Finally we got to a point where the last, that amazing day happened. 4 days before, they took the sheep, the Egyptian god, and they put it into their homes and they tied it. And then on that day, they killed it and they had the blood on the doorpost. And they were waiting for Hashem himself to pass through Mitzrayim, not an angel, him himself. And that night, that incredible crescendo of spiritual revelation, Hashem passed over the Jewish houses and he spared them and he killed the firstborn of Egypt. And the Jews had a revelation, unbelievable experience. The voltage was so high that had they gone out of their homes, they would have been fried. Then they put the blood on the doorpost to protect them, and they had to stay indoors. Had they ventured outside, the revelation, because it wasn't even an angel, it wasn't a malach, it was Hashem's presence himself. The power was so great. In fact, it says that the power that raised us to that incredible spiritual, incandescent spiritual level was what killed the Egyptians. Because they were so impure, they just being exposed to that incredible voltage of purity wiped them out. And we were burned into purity by that level. Now, so when was the last minute in Egypt? At midnight when Hashem passed over and we went out rapidly, yes, we exited Egypt. You want to tell me that had we been delayed there for another hour, we would have sunk into 49th level and disappeared? One more level of that, you would have been angels. Do you hear the question? Listen, you don't need such a Talmudic head for this question. It's a beautiful question, isn't it? Do you hear it? It's a fantastic question, huh? Now, so how do you answer this question? So what do the Chazal mean? One more minute there, we would have been finished? You know, the slavery ended when the plagues began. The thing was, from the moment the plagues began and Hashem started revealing himself and Moshe Rabbeinu arrived, the whole thing became a tremendous, it wasn't what it was before. From the moment the water became blood, or even before that, the slavery ended. So they weren't slaves anymore. They sat back and they watched Egypt laid low. They watched their tormentors being laid low. They saw Hashem appear. Each miracle was great. Did you imagine what it was when the hail came, for example? It was hail with fire inside. You know that? It was hail with fire inside. It wasn't just hail. It was hail with fire inside. They saw miracles. Each of the 10 plagues was the reverse, have we mentioned this before, of the 10 sayings of the creation. They saw the creation of the world purified before their eyes. Unbelievable level. And then you want to tell me that, yes, had they been left one moment in that, they would have sunk into oblivion? Fantastic question. There are different ways to answer it, many ways. One answer, just to show you how powerful the question is, there's one Kabbalistic commentary that says an unbelievable thing. It says, you know what it means? You would have been finished with one more minute. Not down, up! That's how we would have been finished. One more minute of that would have lifted us out of our skins. We would have been raised to the divine. We would have been raised to a messianic level. There would have been no more. The whole correction of the world, the final messianic phase would have arrived, and that would have been that. And we didn't deserve that, because that you've got to work for. Like we discussed last time. That Hashem wasn't going to do for us. He stepped in then because we were about to be lost. But to let it go, had he let that experience last another few minutes, or one more day, the voltage would have been so high we wouldn't have been human anymore. We would have been raised to the final level of spiritual perfection. That would have been the end of the world. And that we're not getting away with without earning. So he stopped it at that moment where it was enough to save us and inspire us, but not enough to bring the final redemption, so that then he could take us out and put us in the desert, and we had to start this long process of working on it ourselves. Which is fantastic. It means that he understands. Yes, this is a famous commentary called the Leshem, the Baal HaLeshem. Left died about 65, 70 years ago. He understands that it means not that one more minute in Egypt would have finished us. Oh, one more minute would have been so incredible that it would have... It's not so simple to see that in the words of that. But you understand that, certainly by yourself. But there's another way to answer this question, and it teaches us an amazing... Let's try and understand like this. Now we're going to take a tour through wonderful depth of the personality, the root of the human personality, and from there we'll be able to try and come back at the end and answer the question, okay? Okay. You see, if you think about it, listen well now. Time, which is what the world's based on, really the basis of the world is time, the physical world, the actual physical components of the world actually exist within time, the real material dimension, the real vessel that holds the world is time, really. The physical components of the world are also the vessels, but they exist within time. That's the ultimate holding dimension. If a person wants to transcend himself, you have to transcend time. You have to operate at a level that transcends time. Obviously, once you extend into time, you become natural. Once you're a function of time, it's just a matter of time. You have to transcend time so that you live in a dimension where time doesn't have an effect on you. And that's what Pesach teaches. Let's see if we can understand this. Most wonderful idea. If a person can get this message, I'll definitely never be the same. See, Pesach teaches the following idea. Time, which is the killer, right? Time, which is what wears you down. All things that exist within time get worse as time goes on. You know that? See, people are like that. That means, again, let me qualify that. The Kabbalists say that anything that has physical components, the longer it's around, the worse it gets. The body, for example, it wears out. Anything in the physical world, as time progresses, grinds down and gets get less. Anything in the spiritual world, obviously all the rules are the opposite. Anything in the spiritual world, the longer it's around, the better it gets. As a person gets older, the body wears down, but the wisdom increases. You see some beautiful examples. It says that anything in the physical world gets older with time, gets older, gets worse, except for wine. The older wine gets, the better it gets. Because wine is secret, a revelation of the secret world. The wine is 70, Yud Nun is 70, and so the secret in Hebrew is 70. Wine brings out the secret world, in many ways, but it brings out the Kabbalistic hidden world. And therefore wine is connected with a beautiful act, and that's of course, no secret, we Jews take wine at any moment of transition into spirituality, right? When the week becomes Shabbos, we take a cup of wine. When we take a physical boy's body and we make a bris, transcending to be able to, we take wine, a marriage. At all moments of transcendence, we take a secret indication of an inner world. It's the most amazing thing. And what's so amazing about it is wine has the power to make you part of the physical world. Isn't that beautiful? But we use it to transcend the physical world. That's the secret of it. Oh, that's an excellent question. Can I answer at the end? Do you mind? Will you remind me? Because it's a discussion on its own. It's a beautiful, beautiful idea, okay? I'll ask you briefly. Okay? Havdalah, we always use it transitioning from the mundane to the Kodesh, right? We go from ordinary to holy, transition from the uncircumcised earthly to the various condition. We use wine. Shabbos from the week, it's always up. So the question is Havdalah, which is from Shabbos down, why do we take wine? The answer is incredible. The answer is, Havdalah is not supposed to be down. Havdalah is supposed to be up. Havdalah is supposed to be that you know why you had a Shabbos, a weekend of Shabbos, so that you get charged up so that next week you can do more than you did last week. If you go to Shabbos and you step down from Shabbos only to get back to where you were before, so it's futile. The idea, you hear that? The idea of Shabbos is to charge you to an unbelievable level, so when you step down into the week, it's a step up. When you're in Shabbos, you're experiencing what you became that week, but there's nothing new you can do. You can't produce in Shabbos, you can just be. You need to step out of Shabbos. It's like coming down to this world. It's a tremendous descent. But now you can get busy and do what you're supposed to do. Coming out of Shabbos is a step down into the physical world, but with an incredible exhilarate, and you need to smell spices to cheer up your neshama from the descent into the physical world. But the simcha of Havdalah is that now you can get your feet stuck into a week to get the next Shabbos much greater than the Shabbos was. That's an elevation. And we symbolize that with the wine. Isn't that amazing? Amazing, huh? It's worth getting up at 6 in the morning and staying up. Okay, now, beautiful, what my Rebbe said. Now, you belong in Yeshiva. That question was asked of him by somebody really nice, and that's what he asked. Now, where was I? Time. Time is the killer. Time wears you down. We together? Time is what wears you down. How do you transcend it? Listen well. You have to track time down to the point before it begins. Isn't that right? If you can strike before time gets a hold of you, you've transcended. The only way you can do that is if you wait, you're finished. You understand as well. If you wait until you become a part of time, then you're part of the mechanical universe and time is taking its effect on you. If you can do what you have to do before time begins, so then you've transcended. You follow? You reach the spiritual core before the time dimension starts to have its grinding down effect. If you can live in the transition zone between what you were yesterday and what you're going to be tomorrow, in that flash of energy of new creation, at that moment you can become what you have to become. As soon as you allow that to stretch out into the natural processes that time take, or try and make this clearer, then you become a victim of time, and you're just following a groove which is basically just a rolling on. Let's try and see if we can feel this. Let's see if we can attack it from different angles and see if we can get this idea. There's nothing more important than this. It's a very great effort. It's a very great effort. You have to be putting out energy unbelievably all the time. You can never sit back and just be what you were yesterday because you're not alive at that point. I mean, you have to be sensible about it. Obviously, you need to rest, but the motivation must be that. Let's take an example. Listen carefully. Let's take a physiological process. Let's say you have an idea, you want to do something, right? He has nerve impulses firing and muscles twitch just as good as you, maybe better. And probably some machines do it better. Are we together? The only thing that the machine can't do or the monkey is generate the desire to do that. They're such idiots, these people. They have a big debate going on in the computer world now, what's called artificial intelligence, where you could build a machine sophisticated enough that it could be a human. They're such fools. They think that the reason machines can't do what we do is because they're just not complex enough yet. When they get a machine with as many connections as the neurons in the brain, you'll have a human. It's such a stupid suggestion, you follow? And no matter how complex a machine gets, it'll do it smoother than you, and faster than you, and slicker than you, but it'll never think of it. Do you follow? Because it doesn't have that interface with the transition, with the transcendent world. It can never have that, no matter how complex you make it. Do you follow? It's such, only an idiot, only a person who brought up in this generation could think like that. A monkey could think like that, a machine could think like that. It's not a human. Are you think it's obvious, but they're actually debating it. Anybody can't grasp that, then it's a real idiot. You follow? I mean, you in computers? So what do we understand? Listen well. We understand that the only meaningful part of a process, of course you need the rest of it, otherwise you're not here. Of course you need to have the idea of giving this gift to your wife that you want to give to show how much you love her. Of course if you don't do it, it's nothing. Of course not. It only comes to fruition when it's actually done. And that's what builds the love, of course. No one's denying its importance. But the point at which the only reason that the action does what it should do is because it reveals what you are and what you are thinking. Are you together? Would your wife appreciate it if every time she walked past the machine went clunk, clunk, gave her a flower? Huh? The point is that it evinces, it shows what was in the core dimension. Are we together? But that's all that counts. From then on, it's a machine. What do you see? That the length of a process is not what makes you special. It's not what makes you human. It's that infinite instant. And as soon as that instant's over, you've lost it already. You become a, that instant is the yeshme ayin. It's a ayin. It's a something from nothing. But the transition between the moment before you had the idea, the flash of inspiration as you had it and wanted to do it, and the next instant is too late already. The next instant is just a technical carrying out of what that was. But that's not you anymore. Are we together? So to live, you have to catch that moment. To be human, to be Jewish, to be spiritual, you have to live in that moment. Only there. Do any of us do that? The Kabbalists say, again, I can't go into too much detail, but the Kabbalists say that's a male experience. The wonder of the female experience is the process that builds. The wonder of the male experience is that it's the energy that starts the process. I can't go into too much detail. That's the wonder of them. It's that burst of energy. Of course it takes a man and a woman, but it's that burst of energy that starts new creation. Are you with me? After that, it's a question of, and you have to have the building, and of course it takes both sides. Where do you see it in Pesach? Pesach's the beginning of the year. The Torah counts Nisan, the first month of the year. The 15th of Nisan, the peak of the month of firstness, yes, of beginningness. That instant of midnight on the 15th of Nisan was a moment beyond time. You see it, for example, let's just understand how many ways you see it. You can't miss it. You need your head ready if you miss it. It was springtime, right? The spring is when the shoots break through the ground. The rest of the season is where it grows and grows and grows and you harvest it. But it's that new creation where the germination happens. Isn't that what we're talking about? That's what happened. That's what springtime is. So, and it has to be in spring. We have a whole lot of laws, halakhically, that we have to make the calendar work in such a way that Pesach always occurs in springtime, because that's exactly what it is. One thing. Second thing. What was the tenth experience? The tenth is always the pinnacle, right, of an experience. We said, remember, that the tenth plagues went in reverse order. So when you come to the tenth of them, actually what you're experiencing is the Bereshis, which is what? The instant of creation of the world. Isn't that when everything happened? And that's why the tenth plague was what? Killing of the firstborn. What is firstborn? What is the nature of a firstbornness? It's the instant of birth, isn't it? That's what it was. You know why the Jews got born at that moment? Because the Egyptian firstborn died at that moment. The negativity of what we were put into Egypt as the negative image of what we were. The negativity of Egypt was killed, and that gave birth to what we were. From the fact that what died in Egypt was the issue of a first birth, you can see that what we were given birth to was the issue of a first birth. Are we together? And that's why there's a human dimension. And that's why, you know, where a person really lives in the flash of creation that's between him and his child. The fact that a person's own life is at stake is nothing compared to a child. That's why, what was Abraham's 10th test? What was Amavina's 10th? Do you think it's coincidental that it was also a firstborn test? Need your head ready to think the Torah is put together, you know, accidentally things happen. One of his early tests was where he was thrown into fire. Nimrod threw him into fire for his belief. That was nothing. The Torah counted as a minor test. The way they sacrificed his firstborn son. That was the heart, that was the ikkah, the nekudah, the flesh of creation, of the birth of the Jewish people that was coming out of him. That's what it was, the tenth test. That corresponds to the word Bereshit, which is the beginning of creation. In the Ten Commandments, what does it correspond to? It all corresponds. The Ten Commandments, the first of them, Anachi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem. Isn't that the beginning of all being? All these ideas are the same thing. So you see, what's Pesach? Pesach is a leaping, remember we said that last time? Pesach is a leaping instantaneously to a transcendent level. Unlike all spiritual processes that go step by step, Pesach means to leap over. He leapt over our houses. On one level it means simply he leapt over the Jewish houses. But Kabbalistically it means he leapt over intermediate stages. Which means that Pesach is a leaping to a level instantaneously without having to go through stages. Which is what we're talking about. That moment of our beginning, where do you see it? Where else do you see it in Pesach? It says we went out in a hurry. The kippozah, we went out in a rush. Why did we go out in a rush? We didn't go out in a rush because we were afraid. The Egyptians were begging us to leave. They were heaping gifts on us. Yes, they were escorting us. It wasn't because we were afraid they changed their minds. But because you have to operate in that flesh, you follow, before time takes its effect. Otherwise you're natural. That's what it says. Listen, just understand. Listen carefully. Listen well. Pesach. Isn't everything about Pesach operating faster than time? What is matzah? What is matzah? Matzah is chometz that quite before it becomes chometz, isn't it? It's just time. What's the difference between chometz and matzah? You know what the difference is? The difference between chometz and matzah is 18 minutes. You know that? If you mix the flour and the water, 18 is high, isn't it? That's the life dimension. That's squeezed down to the minimum time. 1 second longer, it becomes chometz. That's amazing. It's not like you took meat and you put milk in. Just the same thing. It's not, you follow. It's not in all other laws of the Torah you deal with something, it's a different thing. An unkosher animal, it's not a kosher animal. Or to shaft it differently. Or you had milk mixed with. Here you have exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing, just time. The only difference is that the chometz, the matzah spent just that little bit too long, that's all. And what has become? Chometz. And you know the difference between matzah and chometz? Matzah is a mitzvah essay deraita. If you eat matzah, it's a positive mitzvah of the Torah that takes you to another world. If you eat chometz, the punishment is koris. Koris is spiritual excision, spiritual death, that's it. God forbid, dying before a certain age and all sorts of, and no existence in it. You hear that? Listen to that. The difference between eating, what are you eating? Flour and water. Eat flour and water, that's this side of the 18 minutes, 1 second this side, and you have a mitzvah which leaps you, you eat the same stuff, 2 seconds later, finished spiritually. Isn't that amazing? Why? Just time. Because the whole idea of Pesach is mitzvah, is operating in the dimension where you're ahead of time, faster than time. In that dimension where you're faster than time is where you're spiritual. If you let it spread out until you slow down and become part of the physical world, then you're physical, you're not spiritual anymore. The difference between chometz and matzah, you know, if you write the words out, the kids will tell you this, learning cheder, if you write the words out, chometz and matzah, actually it's exactly the same letters, you know that? The only difference is chometz has a ches and matzah has a hay. The only difference is that the hay of matzah is like that. You know what a ches, you know what a ches looks like? Touches, that's all. What's the difference? One drop of ink. The tiniest speck, that's all it is. 1 second longer, 1 speck of ink. You know, it's another amazing thing. The punishment for eating chometz is very unusual in the Torah. You know why? Because you're liable for no matter how little you eat. You know that? There's no other mitzvah like that. Every other mitzvah of eating something unkosher, you have to eat a certain amount. There's a statutory limit. If you don't eat a kazais, which is like an olive, the punishment's there. You're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to do it, but the punishments don't apply. Eat pork, God forbid. What happens? If you eat a little bit, yes? Prawns. If you eat a little bit, what happens is, not so funny. If you eat a little bit, the Torah punishments don't apply. If you eat the kazais, and that's why we're not fanatical, people think we're not fanatical about it, if a drop of milk falls into your meat soup, you're allowed to eat it. As long as it's a small amount and it's thing and didn't do it purposefully and so on and so on. But chometz. One speck, the pot once touched a crumb. Where do you get that from? The Torah doesn't operate that. Well, go for majorities. You know, it's reasonable. Why? Because we're dealing with a borderline between infinity and the finite. Do you follow what's happening here? Every aspect of this Yom Tov, every mitzvah, every detail shows you the same thing, doesn't it? Again and again and again. So they went out in a hurry. They went out in haste. Not because they were rushing, but they went out because they had to become the Jewish people at a moment beyond time, so that we would be a people who live beyond time. Chometz, matzah, is just a delay, that's all it is. You know, you see this idea so beautifully. Let me share with you an incredible idea. Unbelievable idea. Let's look at Bereshis, the beginning, right? We said that this, there's a few more minutes, right? We said that this idea of Bereshis, this idea of newness, is all contained in the concept of Bereshis in the beginning. Now the Kabbalists say the beginning is always a point, and then the point grows and develops. The concept, let me ask you something. If you wanted to show me, see if you're creative, let's take the teachers. Take the concept. Let's say you wanted the child to draw you. You want somebody to draw you a shape that has nothing new. You know what shape would show that? Perfect circle. You know that? It's the only shape known to man. Listen well. The letter Samach, which is a perfect circle, it's the only shape conceivable that has nothing new. There's no starting point. There's no point different from any other point. From any tiny segment of it, you can predict the whole thing and it'll get back to the same point and keep going around. There's no other shape like that. Even a straight line, you don't know where it will end. Any irregular shape, you don't know where the next, you can't predict where the next bend is going to come. Only a circle is a completely constant shape, and that's why it's called the letter of the Satan. You know that? It's called the letter of the evil forces in the world. Because it has no newness. It's all continuity. You hear that? It's a letter only of continuity. Can you feel that? Any other shape at some point different from the other points. A line has a beginning. But a circle has no point of defined point of beginning. It's all continuity. And therefore, it's all in the world of physicality. If you look in the Torah, in the book of Genesis, in the description of the beginning of the world, do you know that there's no summer? Do you know that? In the whole description of the creation of the world, from the word Bereshis, Baro, Elohim, Eitz Shemayim, Ve'etz Haaretz, Va'aretz, Ha'isa, Tohu Va'avohu, etc., etc., no Samach. For pages. Isn't that amazing? The first Samach in Bereshis is where it talks about the rivers coming out of Eden that go round. Or it says that he clothes the flesh, Va'yiskor, Basar, Tachtena, in the creation of woman. Because woman is the being who puts continuity in the world. But there's a brocha in there also, like we explained before. So now we're just talking about. But until that point, there's no Samach in the Torah. Isn't that amazing? Because the beginning of the world is all a concept of new beginning. It's not the concept of continuity. There's another parsha in the Torah, by the way. There are one or two others. There's one other parsha in the Torah that has no Samach either. You know what it is? The parsha of the firstborn. Isn't that amazing? You know the mitzvah of firstborn? When an animal has a firstborn offspring, it's Kodesh and it has to be treated with sanctity and so forth. That whole parsha has no Samach at all. Obviously. Obviously, isn't it? After what we said tonight. You try to write a page of prose in English without an S. Huh? They're beautiful? Glad I can. What does all this mean? You see, the point of newness is that point. The continuity, let's try and make it practical, okay? Let's try and make it practical. First, let's answer the question. How what we started with, and then see if we can make a practical, and we'll finish with that. What's the answer? So let's see if we can, let's answer the question explicitly, okay? The question we asked was that you have an incredible level of voltage in Mitzrayim at that last moment. One more moment of that would have finished us off? Impossible. But the answer is clear. After everything we've said, the answer is like this. The answer is that one more minute would have finished us off. Not because we would have sunk into impurity. The problem with one more minute in Mitzrayim would have been one more minute. That was the problem. What it means is not that we were sunk into a level where another minute of it would have sunk us and finished us. What it means is that one more minute of time would have taken us into the dimension of time. And we would have been born as a people, a function of time. The point of the Jewish people is to give, the whole point of the Jewish people is to be a transcendent people. We live in that moment before time begins. We live in that transcendent zone before the physicality becomes physical. Do you follow? So our birth, the conception of the Jewish people, that moment of new creation, had to all be completed in that mystical dimension of transcendence before time becomes real. So at that last moment in Egypt, what it means is that one more moment would have finished us. It doesn't mean had it been the next second or the next second. It means that when the time comes, you have to do what has to be done at the right time instantaneously before time has a chance to take effect. Before that point becomes a circle and generates that continuity. You follow? Before the 18 minutes becomes more than 18 minutes and must have become common. You follow? Beautiful. The idea of one more minute in Egypt It's not that another minute would have sank us into 49 levels. If one more minute would have been a minute, it would have been, we'd been in time. Once we became a function of time, we would have been a people that functions in time. We would have been a natural people, and Jewish people are not a natural people. We're transcendent people. The reason we are transcendent people is because we were born at an instant where everything in the world was new. It was the month of newness, it was the springtime. All the cosmological forces were geared towards that instant of creation. The whole idea of Pesach is that when that instant comes, you are that thing before the instant is an instant, and you're fully formed. Now what will happen is the next second automatically will be a second of new generation. If you were born as a being that's transcendent, that's making ashes, yes? Afer and Ophir, that's making ashes become earth. So if you if that's all you are because you were struck and your foundation was in that instant, then every instant of your being will be able to be that. You'll never be able to sink, you follow? And that's why we couldn't stay another instant in time. We had to move, we had to leave before time became time. Faster than time. Let's see. In their own being, they did this. In their own being, the mashal, what's an example? It says, Avram Avinu ate matzah on Pesach. How could he eat matzah? There wasn't an Egypt yet. There wasn't a slavery. There wasn't a Jewish people who went out of Egypt with the bread that didn't rise. Because he was sensitive to this time. When that time of year occurred, it says he learned the whole Torah from observing the world. When he saw an instant of newness where the world was rejuvenated, he understood exactly what that instant meant. And he understood that matzah can't become chomet. And it says, when the malachim came to visit him, it says he fed the matzah. He kept the whole Torah. He figured it out from the world. So what did he do in his own existence? He had a Pesach. Oh, there's no question. He, on the contrary, he was the one who taught this, so that when we were in Egypt and the time became, we could do that. He was the one who burnt his ashes and made earth out of it. On the contrary. What's the practical application? Let's just finish with practical application. The practical application, if you read any Musa work, any book of personality growth development, I'll always tell you, and this is the first of the 49 steps. That's what this week is. The first week is the week of Chesed. We're on the fourth night now of the first week. The week of new beginning. The week of generating, going out of yourself, but with an incredible energy. That's what this week is. If you read Muslim books, they'll show you that the only way you can work on yourself is that you have to do something before... Listen well. You have to do a thing. If you want to be spiritual, you have to do a thing before your side, your aspect of continuity and habit gets involved. Once the side of your personality that's involved in habit, in doing what you're doing now because you did it before, you're not living. Once that's involved, you're not spiritual. You have to do a thing, yes, because you just now generated it. You know, the Kabbalistic interpretation of that is that if you do a thing in the instant while you have the inspiration, you can never go wrong. Do you know that? You can never have what's called Yetzer Hara. You can never have the negativity of your own personality involved in the male moment. In the moment of new creation, nothing can go wrong. Because it's all new spiritual energy. The negativity in the world always takes time or space. It needs something to work on. You know, it says in Egypt, the Egyptians could do all the miracles. You know that? Every plague that happened, they did. The one they couldn't do was killing. Killing is lice. You know why they couldn't manufacture lice? Too small. Too small. When a thing approaches the limits of space or time, only Kedusha can take effect. Only spirituality. Impurity can't take effect. You hear that? Impurity needs space. It needs expansion. It needs physicality, not spirituality. You hear that? As soon as you let the thing become big, become physical, become inflated, isn't that what chomet is? Chomet is matter. It's simply the same thing, but it looks like more than what it is. As soon as the thing starts to expand, it's the ego. As soon as that starts to happen, then you're lost. Then you're functioning within the physical dimension and everything's lost. In the moment of new creation, you can't go wrong. There's only inspiration in that moment. And that's why you should do everything that you do in the world with the energy of new creation. If you could beat your own... Because, let's face it, what does your own negativity say to you all the time? Does it tell you to do new things? The dimension of negativity always says to you, hold it, slow down, or usually says, do it again. It doesn't say do something new. Isn't it embarrassing? What do you fall... You know, I don't want to show of hands here, but just ask yourself, what do you fall for in your own life? What is it that you succumb to all the time? Isn't it the same old thing that you've been falling for the last half, 45 years, 33 years? Yeah, it would be a little more entertaining if you felt a new thing, no? But it's the same old thing, isn't it? You felt for it yesterday. He puts a new perfume on it or a new colour kind of, he dresses it up a little newy, but that's the same basic thing underneath, isn't it? The same thing you've been falling for who knows how long, and then he falls for it again. Yes? He gets you, the whole aspect, yes, of negativity, the depth of it, that's a beautiful thing to understand. The aspect of your own negativity is the fact that it doesn't try and generate units. It's your kedusha, your spirituality, that makes you want to do something new. Leap up with energy and do something new. It's your negativity that wants to hold you in a pattern, because that's where you're safe. Once you're in a groove and your habit formed, once you're in that groove and then you're safe. You'll never do anything spiritual. You just run in that circle that's wearing a groove deeper and deeper into your patterns in your home or whatever it is, and that's. But I want to give a practical example. And you can feel it, can't you? Isn't it in the moment of a new generation or something that you feel exhilaration? Does anybody feel exhilaration in the same habit pattern that you did? You know, you don't feel anything. You feel numbed when you fall into a habit pattern because you're not living. That's a sure spiritual sign that you're not alive. It's in the moment of breathtaking exhilaration when you do something new that you're living, and your neshama knows it, and that's why you feel that. Again, intimate details are. But I'll give you a practical example. Let me give you an example. I must say, let's take a scenario. I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example of a battle with the Yetzer Hara, a classic battle. 6:30 in the morning and you wake up. Cold outside, warm in bed. What happens? The first thing that happens, your Yetzer Hara chatting away. Yeah? And he says to you, just hold it, wait 1 second. Let's just think this thing through rationally. Then he says to you, don't do anything extreme. Let's talk about this logically. And then you say, And he says to you, now listen. He says like this. He says, look, it's cold outside, huh? It's warm in bed. I know that if you get up now, you can have a whole extra hour in the day to achieve and all that, but you're really tired. You know, you said, I'm really late last night. You're really tired. I suggest you have another hour sleep. Sure, you lose an hour in the day. I'm well aware of that, but you know what energetic, you know what kind of energy you'll have when you wake up an hour from now? You'll be fantastic. You'll leap. You know what you'll be able to do? You'll conquer the world. Huh? And then you say to yourself, just 1 second, maybe. But maybe if I get out now and I splash my face with cold water and I have a strong coffee, maybe I'll. But you know what? Once he's talking to you, you're finished. Once the conversation is underway, you think you're talking and you're arguing, but he's got you exactly where he wants you, and you're finished before you begin. The Pala Musa say, you know, there's only one way to win that argument. You know what that is? As you open up your eyes in the morning, you leap out of bed. Yes? And then you find yourself standing there shaking, wondering what the heck came over you. And then you debate the question. Even then it's hard enough. It's agonizingly hard, yes, to make the right decision at that moment. But at least you've got a chance. But once you're in his territory, do you follow? Once you're in the territory of continuity, of you're finished. You follow? You're finished. They're going to take you. You know what usually happens, of course? What usually happens is that he kills you. He's such a filthy creature. You know, the Gemara calls him a manubal. Manubal means a stinking like a carcass. You're on your territory. What? That's what your answer is. Usually what happens is he gets you into a situation, he doesn't want you to rest another hour, he wants to kill you mamish. So you lie there, thinking about what a heel you are, and you spend a whole hour debating the whole thing, half asleep, you don't sleep either, and then you creak out of bed, isn't that what happens? And you're not rested, and you didn't have the hour. Isn't that what he wants? Huh? He's asked for the kill. Anyway, I think the idea is plain, no? That's the way it is. Nobody's suggesting that you leap into action without thinking, we're not talking about that. We're talking about that. You leap into action. We're not talking in intellect. Of course you think before you leap into action. We're not talking. But we're talking when it comes to that which is a habit. Before a person does something because they've been doing it before, they need to examine it. And even if you need to do what you did before, but you must do it because it's new now, because it needs to be done now. Not just because you did it yesterday without thinking. I know the offer for Eifer Yechud. And that's the idea of Pesach. The idea of Pesach is cupping the moment. Of course the idea is not just to do it on Pesach. The idea is to learn it on Pesach so that you can carry it through. The idea is, yes, what, if we can finish like this, what's the talent of being a woman? What's the talent of that function of continuity that a woman has that's so dangerous, that can be a rat, that can be a habit-forming groove? The talent of being a woman is taking that spark, which is new creation, and maintaining it as a spark, not freezing it into what it once was. Do you follow? The wrong side of being a woman, and of course that's in all of us, is taking the energy and freezing it as what it is. You can't afford to do that. The next moment demands that the spark that was appropriate to the previous moment now sparks a new energy that's greater for this moment. And that's the talent of a woman. Isn't that what she does? She takes the spark of a child and she grows it and grows it and grows it until it needs a new being, a new environment, and then she lets it loose and then it becomes anew. And it always has to be kept doing that. That's the kedusha involved, that the kedusha that shows that the circle, the true dimension of the circle, the woman's letter, is not to maintain what was before, but to maintain the newness that was before so that it becomes something new every moment. That is a wonderful idea in Pesach, that a person could be exactly to that. So then a person never have a boring day. You'd never come to a thing in your life that you ever do out of habit, yes? You always be able to generate newness, and that is the way to reach some sort of transcendence.